What is up, Hockey IQ listeners? I'm here to chat about our newest sponsor, Sensarena. Your brain is one of the most important parts of your body. Why not invest in a tool that allows you to train it? With Sensarena, athletes can gain a competitive edge using VR training. Players are able to go through a scenario thousands of times without having to step foot on the ice. No more waiting around for puck touches or perfect scenarios. Sensarena can enhance reaction time, decision-making, and multitasking abilities, making you the next MVP. I mean, if the LA Kings are using it, it's got to be good. With our promo code HockeyIQ, you receive $50 off an annual plan purchase. Head on over to Sensarena.com to check it all out.
On the Hockey IQ podcast today, we bring on Jim Haberstrom. Jim, great to have you. We're coming here live from the USA Hockey Coach Developers Academy, which is a really cool thing about coaches learning how to coach other coaches how to coach. So coaching coaches how to coach and be better at that.
Yeah, it's been a great weekend. We've been learning all different kinds of things of how to help facilitate to get coaches to think about what they're doing, try to change their ways into more about having the players do the learning as opposed to, you know, we as coaches just always giving them the answers.
Kind of fun. You have a really interesting background, but there's a lot of translatable skills you've picked up the way. And every time I listen to you, I'm like, man, Jim, just he's so succinct. He says it better than I can, kind of jealous on it. So why don't you give us a 30-second background on how that kind of prepared you for your current role and what you're currently doing?
Well, I do have a little bit of a strange background. When I graduated high school, I was, you know, I played hockey, but then I was 125 pounds. So I said I took a music scholarship and became a professional musician for about 15 years. And then, of course, I had kids and then they wanted to play hockey. So I got into coaching and it just so worked out the way my career changed. I became a hockey director and I've been a hockey director for the last 22, 23 years.
Right. And how has that maybe prepared you a little bit for what you're doing now? And also, we should probably go back and say, you know, what is a hockey director and what do they actually do? Because it's super confusing if you don't know. And it's a lot less fun than just going on the ice every single day, all day.
That's a great question, because 95% of us, when we become a hockey director, we have no idea what it really is. We all think we're just going to go out there, run practices, have all the fun. But it turns out that that happy space on the ice is maybe 10 or 15% of what we do. A lot of it has come dealing with parents, make them understand what's happening, making sure the kids' schedules are correct, that they referees are there. Married to a hockey mom, I understand that she wants to know when are practices, what if they're going to be canceled, we're going to, you know, when am I going to find out? They want to make sure that the hockey socks fit their kids, that all these little things that make a great environment for the kids that we didn't really think was important. Even things like making sure that we have pucks, because all hockey coaches know it seems like pucks get eaten and when it's time for practice and there's no pucks in the building. So making sure we have all the supplies that are needed to make sure that it runs as smooth as possible and the kids have the best possible experience.
Well, being in Florida, it's got to be a different experience, particularly working at the Ice Den, enjoying the beautiful Panthers and the playoff run that they're currently on. It's got to be an interesting time of seeing the support and the excitement that the NHL brings to an area maybe that isn't a traditional hockey market.
Yeah, I mean, we're lucky in the state of Florida. We have the Lightning up in Tampa area, and then the Panthers. They've been there long enough that they've had pretty good fan base. We also get a lot of Northerners that transplant down there. And with the success of the Lightning, the Tampa market has exploded. They were already pretty big, but they've just exploded. And now in our area down in South Florida, we have six or seven programs all within an hour of each other.
So what are like the big programs that you're spearheading and you know, what are the key elements for you as you're spearheading it to create such a great environment that it is?
Well, when I was working with the Panthers, the main idea, my main job was to try to grow the recreational aspect of it. I was involved with travel, but we wanted to increase the base. So what we did was, instead of looking at it as just a recreational program, we put in the same resources into recreational hockey or house league hockey that we had in travel. We would practice twice a week. We'd have five or six paid coaches out on the ice. I myself would design every practice so we knew that every single kid was getting the same opportunities to improve. It was a really good atmosphere for them too, with the idea that if a kid was playing rec and they only wanted to come one night a week, they could, but the opportunities were there to be as, you know, get as much opportunity to improve as they could. The on-ice coaches, again, like, were our travel coaches, so they helped train the regular, you know, our volunteer coaches. So it was a rather unique experience in that the organization, the Panthers, were willing to put a lot of resources and money behind developing as many kids as possible. And what we found, too, was now kids who weren't earmarked at 8U is on the travel team, or weren't 10U on the travel team, they still had the opportunity to make the 11 or 12-year-old team. In fact, we were putting our 10U travel teams all came basically from kids that were in our rec league, and we were feeding two or three other programs in the area and then still filling in the back area because the practices were fun. It was well organized and people wanted to be there.
I mean, that's just a great environment to start. And then you add in some fun that I know that you're 100% into, and the way you design practices, just the activities themselves are fun. And, you know, what USA Hockey is doing creates such a great environment. The activities are phenomenal. And the way they're educating coaches on how to provide this is obviously top notch. Maybe give some insight of when you were creating one of those practice plans, you know, what were you thinking of as a hockey director who's trying to put out such a great program? Because, you know, when you've got a ton of kids out there and it's like herding cats, especially at the youngest ages, to say the least, you know, that's a definite challenge. But how did you kind of attack that? How did you approach the content and coordination?
Well, one of the biggest keys is, like you said, there's so many kids out there, you got to keep them moving. So instead of having individual line drills with one kid going at a time, we try to have it where there's more like competition, that we'd have three or four kids going against each other in a game-like situation. We would work on skating. Maybe we'd be playing like a tag type game, or to make it more hockey-like, we might be, players would have ringettes and they're trying to avoid each other with a ringette, but they're also trying to tag the other player. So they're working on skating without anybody realizing what they're doing. They're pivoting, they're stopping, they're turning, they're going backwards, all in what would be like a more game-like situation, as opposed to going around a cone where I can prepare where I'm going to turn. Now I've got to turn because I have to turn. That makes it more fun. There's less standing around. It also makes the kids a little bit more autonomous in that they're creating and deciding what to do. And that fun factor is caused by the competition. And each kid wants to be the best they can out there. It's so much more enjoyable that they want to come back because of that. They're not standing around. You know, kids will tell you, they'll go to a practice where you might start off with 20 minutes of line drills and they end with a game. And then the kid said it was great because they remembered the last 20 minutes of the game, but that wasn't the great part necessarily, standing in line, going back and forth. And today kids don't get a chance to go out and play. So when I think about when I was a kid, we could just go out until the lights turned on, you know, we had to come back inside. We didn't get in lines to go play. We went and we played, and that's what made it so much fun.
Well, now if you do that, you know, you're considered a bad parent. You're just allowing your kids to run rampant in the neighborhood. But I love that. It's allowing kids to play in just a modern fashion that we find society in. Obviously you can't change it completely, but you can meet it where it is and create a lot of good experiences. And I love the word that you use was giving autonomy and having some autonomous, just like the environment to create that is really, really great. But the benefits of autonomy later down the line where kids become their own best coaches. I mean, you've seen a ton of kids go through in 15 years. I'm just curious, you know, what are some things? Cause I, you know, the key thing that I came to is like autonomy. Like that's so massive because there's so many players these days that they're waiting for someone to tell them to do it. And then they actually go do it rather than, oh, I'm going to own my own destiny, own my own development, own my own fun, whatever it is. I'm curious over your experience, just all of those elements we talked about, what sticks out to you and why?
I was the hockey director in Orlando, Florida. We had a group of kids that came in between the 91 and 93 birth year. We had a lot of kids on either end that were really good, but this one group did very well. Ryan Carpenter played in the NHL. Brian Ferland played with us for a year. He went to the NHL. Another kid, Kyle Bauman, played in the AHL. And a bunch of these other kids played either D3 or D1 college. And they didn't take private lessons. What they did was every time I had a program, they would go skate in it. But then they would also 4 or 5 days a week come and play pickup hockey. And they would compete against each other. They'd have fun. They'd challenge each other. If somebody pulled a great move, the other guy would high five them and stuff like that. So it was just this constant playing against each other, competing, learning from each other, and not having anybody tell them what to do. I mean, I vividly remember running a 3-on-3 league for kids in the summer, and a mom coming down to me and say, "But you're not coaching them." And I'm like, "That's the whole point. They're supposed to be going out there. You know, I'm there to make sure that nobody's taking anybody's head is off, or, you know, that every kid's playing, that they're there to try to teach themselves and learn and get feedback by what's successful and what's not."
I love that. You know, that's the whole point. Or that the reason we're not doing anything is they need to play and experiment and try things. Like you said, like they need to see what works, what doesn't work. Because at the end of the day, you know, if they're having minimum success and they're failing, maybe they're gonna do less of that. But it's kind of like the old pond. You know, they always talk about the mystical old pond, but you really don't have that in Florida. You can't go outside and go on a pond, but there's ways you can recreate that. And the fact that they were working together and getting excited about things that they were doing, that's awesome. Because now, like in my mind, I'm thinking like, okay, they're clearly talking about these things on ice and off the ice, and they're having so much fun. They want to do it more and more. And that's how they probably develop themselves into NHL players, that iron sharpens iron. And it's iron sharpens iron, and really the positive effect of working together, sharing experience. Oh, check this out. Check, you try this, blah, 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 all that. They probably did hours of that. And, you know, I do private lessons. You may do the same, but, you know, I'm trying to get them into that mindset and that kind of sphere, and maybe give them a few more ideas rather than what most people would think of as a skills coach of like teach them how to toe drag.
Yeah, I agree. I've probably done 1,000 private lessons in my life, and I would have to say that they have truly evolved over the way I used to do it, where it's now I'm trying to help them get into a situation and help them figure it out. I can, you know, I may start out with them doing a cutback based off of a, okay, I want you to cut back at the cone. But very quickly, it's going to be more like I'll have either another player or myself. And either if I'm in front of you, well, you're not going to, you know, you're going to cut back. If I'm behind you, I don't want you to cut back. And you're going to decide where to cut back based off of what the environment's telling you. Because what I see is too many of the kids, when they do it the other way, they've already planned where they're going to cut back. So it's easy. And then they get in the game and they have no idea why to cut back. So we try to now put a lot of the whys with it. Now, obviously, if a kid has a technical shortcoming, yeah, we're going to work on it, but I'm not going to tell him what his body does. I mean, there's a saying that the body's really bad at doing what we tell it to do, and which follows with paralysis by analysis. But we may say, okay, what would you do here? How would you, you know, or I want to get you to feel like something. You know, like I used to try to get kids to bend their knees. If I tell them to bend their knees, sometimes their butt's in the air, but their knees are bent. So now we'll say, okay, what does it feel like when you push down the tongues of your skates? So we get more of a feeling. So we teach by analogy. A lot of times, I mean, I think it's really important that we, as the private instructor, knows exactly what that body's doing, but we have to find ways to get the body to do the things that need to be done without them thinking about this muscle, that, you know, this leg position, and make it almost game-like in a sense. Because I had a really good power skating instructor she'd worked with the Edmonton Oilers, and said the way that she got them to get on board with her was how to put everything in context into a game. Like, if I turn my head really fast, it makes me make a mutt type turn, but more importantly, I see the ice faster. And if you can swap all these things into how it makes me a better player, not just a better skater or whatever, you get more buy-in, and it actually makes more sense. It's kind of like when I was a musician, they said if you try to play something musically, usually the technique took care of itself. And so now we're thinking game-like, and how it's going to help me in the game, and the technique takes care of itself.
I love that. The technique takes care of itself. I'm gonna have to steal that one. But I really enjoyed that piece there, because it's around the idea of like, how do we avoid creating practice players? Because if you're always doing something in the same time or around a cone, you miss that key aspect of the pressure and the fact that there's someone is out there trying to take your puck or trying to stop you from doing whatever you want to do. And then that's so massive. And then the second piece that really stuck out to me was how you're teaching what I call athletic feel. Like, what is the feeling of the game where just everything feels natural and you're getting into, you know, the mythical flow state, as they call it. I think that's pretty, pretty cool of figuring out, okay, maybe it's not telling kids to bend at their knees, but I want you to really feel the laces biting against your ankle or, you know, down low, all of that. I mean, that's what really sticks. I remember one practice we did just like a normal snake drill. Like, you go through all the dots and the kids are skating around. And I remember watching the kids, I'm like, ooh, this is really rough. I'm like, all right, let's just try this. Let's see what happens. I want everyone to feel like your upper body is stacked on your lower body and that you're going to crumple down and bend. So your body's in a loaded position. That was all I said. And we did it again. It was literally night and day difference in skating. And I literally did not say, you know what? You should bend at your knees more. No, we've got to figure out ways to put this in the subconscious a little bit and making the lesson about the athletic feel rather than, oh, I need my right leg here. I need to open my shoulders now, blah, 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 all of that. And the second piece that you talked about was like putting into a context of a game. Like, I'm a big fan of puck centric skating development. Like, if we can add a puck, let's add a puck. Some players, they need that out so they can simply get the skating technique to a basic level. But once we can get there, introduce a puck, because the puck leads the skating. Like, if you put a puck in an area, like, you're going to go in tight turn so you can go get it. And I love the idea of like the head turning first and starting that kinetic chain. That's really, really cool. I'd love for you to dive in more about maybe some of that stuff, but specifically, like, how can we avoid creating practice players? Because, you know, nothing is more annoying for a coach and a parent when they see their kid working on something, goes to a game, never uses, or it's all they use and it's the wrong place and the wrong time and they get the puck taken away from them.
Yeah, I mean, Florida used to be known, or in some places still are, as being up when they're 10 years old, they were the greatest Cones players in the world. And you can be very successful at 10U hockey being a Cones player because you just skate better than other people or you handle the puck better. But as you get older, it becomes more whether or not I can make really good decisions and I understand the game. So a lot of stuff, like if we're doing skating drills we'll do a lot of stuff with ringettes with little kids, and we'll play games with ringettes. Like, they play 2-on-2 or 3-on-3 ringette game. And all of a sudden, because they're not worried about losing the puck, they start doing spinoramas and stuff. Like, you didn't think these kids could even do these moves, but they're stopping, they're starting, they're turning around. And now those skating skills become functional or functional in a game sense. And I understand doing line drills, there's places for everything, but I heard Ty Ennis have a really good idea. If you're going to do line drills, why don't you have one line going one way and another line coming the other way? So now they've got to start thinking too, not about like just doing that activity, but, oh, I got to have my head up. I got to know where I'm going with this. Why is this practical? And I think what we do tend to do is with some of our line drills is, or cone drills, is they look really good doing those. So parents and as coaches see them getting better, but whether that translates to the game is hard to tell. Whereas, you know, yes, that's maybe helping this, but is that just getting better at that skating, or is it better making a hockey player? One of the things I remember from doing one of our CEP classes, we asked a simple question, is why do we practice? And it starts out with, oh, to work on our edges, to get better at handling the puck, get better. It took 5 minutes for one of the coaches to finally say, to get better at playing hockey, which is what we're there for.
It's truly incredible. I'm like thinking back to that exact slide of like, why do we practice? And it's like, we want to play better. Like, we want to have more effectiveness. Like, effectiveness is the ultimate goal. Does it need to be pretty? Not really. Does it make it easier? Yeah. But it's not required. I mean, there's some players in the NHL. I played in an adult league down in Columbus. I'm not going to name names, but I'm more talented than they are from a technical skill point. But man, they've got some great, great habits. They know how to do body positioning. You know, I'm 5'10", 160 on a wet day. Like, I'm going to lose out to him on a face-off. Like, he's got leverage. So like, there's a lot more things that go into it rather than just having sweet hands or anything like that. And like they say, you'll always get better at what you practice. the question for us as parents, players, coaches is what we're practicing actually matter. And I love where you're talking about, like, even using the ring at, well, okay, well, now they don't have to worry about losing the puck. Their head's going to come up more. They're reading pressure, which is the ultimate here, is figuring out timing of the move and when is a good time to use a certain one, maybe not so much another time. Like, all of that is fantastic. And you mentioned just parents and what to expect. Like, maybe it should look a little messy. Maybe it shouldn't look beautiful lines and perfect every time. So I'm curious, from a hockey director, you obviously work with parents a ton. You know, how do you go about involving and educating parents? Because parents are not the enemy. They are our greatest asset as coaches. Big fan of parents and how they get involved. Just want to make sure that they're involved in the right way and the right fashion and helping the kids, the program, and themselves have a better experience.
Well, one of the things I started thinking about was the idea with, we want to keep our parents informed. It was just the concept of that we don't want a vacuum. And there's a vacuum of information, meaning that they're getting it from somewhere else. Or it's like I try to tell other coaches, we don't want to create a vacuum because a vacuum sucks. And that's the whole idea of a vacuum. And we don't want it to be there. So if I can give them information, then that's what they're talking about to each other. They're not hearing somebody say, well, this is dumb, or I saw this done somewhere else. I'll send an email about, this is why we're doing this. This is why we played tag. This is what this game's supposed to be doing here. This is where we're doing this. And then this is why we're not doing such and such. I have to admit, I had to change because, again, when I was a new hockey director 20-something years ago, I would maybe get defensive. You know, I was like, well, what do you know? You know, and the standard line with coaches would be, well, I'm a coach. You're a doctor. I don't question you on being a doctor. But we got to remember that these are their children. And the children are the most important things in their lives. And as a parent, I know that. So they're only trying to find out what they think is going to be best for their kids. And there's always somebody that's going to give them information. And we just want to make sure the information they're getting is coming from us. And some won't agree with us, but what you're going to do is you're going to get that part that really want to learn. And then you're going to get the ones that are on the fence who don't, you know, oh, now I kind of get it. And then that helps stop some of that negative talk.
Vacuums do suck. That is true. And I love that idea of keeping parents informed, and there's many ways to go about it, whether it be a weekly email, doing it every few weeks of saying, you know, here's kind of what we're working on at practice. These are the things you may be seeing in games, which I think is really cool when you're starting to talk about, hey, we've been talking about activating the weak side defenseman. Look for that in our next few games, and the parents see it and they're like, oh, that's pretty cool. All right. And then they're seeing the players filling in and they're doing some positional swaps and, you know, they feel a little bit more involvement with it, or at least have the knowledge into it. I think that's really cool. I'm curious, from like a hockey director standpoint, you're obviously giving a lot of this information, but I'm thinking also from just you as a parent, like, what was your experience as a parent going through this? And also your wife's experience of going through it, because you have it in one and you're probably behind the bench, but she's probably on the other side looking in, which it's two different perspectives. And I'm interested to hear more about that.
Yeah. I'd even get the quotes from my wife, like, why aren't you telling them anything? You know, like, why aren't you coaching? Because they see it in a totally different way. You know, and I'd be telling her, you know, I'm going by telling a kid one little thing here or ask them a little thing here. The parents, they're looking for sometimes something different than what maybe their child needs. They're looking for us as, you know, we're coaches. We're supposed to be giving these font of information for everybody, like telling them what to do, you know, this kind of stuff, as opposed to now where, you know, maybe I'm trying to set up an environment where they learn, where they start figuring it out. I'm still coaching them, but I'm not sitting there telling them this is the answer. This is the answer. Because very often you'll see coaches, and I've, you know, really good coaches, when they're first starting out, they ask a kid's questions, like, and they'll regurgitate an answer, but then they don't go out and do it. And the coach is frustrated, but they don't really know. They know what to tell us, you know, as we were learning a lot today, the whole idea of knowing about the game as opposed to knowing in the game while you're what you're trying to do. So that's, I mean, the coaches are trying maybe to approach it a different way. Parents are looking to see that their kids are actually being taught. So it's that communication with them that we are teaching, but thinking about how they're trying to learn.
Yeah. I feel like that's the number one thing, is just parents understanding, like, what does a great environment look like? Cause it's so hard to understand if you aren't, you know, nerding out on this stuff like you and I are. Like, the environment is the most important, and what environment the coach creates is absolutely, absolutely vital. It's like a plant, right? Like, you're going to grow better in a sunny environment than one that's cloudy all the time, you know, but what does that look like? And everything we've been talking about of like putting them in areas where we're maybe not giving them the solution or the answer. You should do this every single time. It's more of allowing them to explore, because that's a lot more sticky of something that they're actually going to be able to remember and learn and take with them through their entire hockey journey, rather than maybe it just works right now at this little level, and figuring out how do we set these kids up for future success, not just today, which is fantastic, which leads me to my next point. You're also part of the Positive Coaching Alliance, which is fantastic. So you wouldn't mind just kind of going into how you got involved with that, and what the Positive Coaching Alliance is and why it's such a great thing for parents, players, and coaches.
Yeah, I first got exposed to Positive Coaching Alliance probably about 15 years ago. The founder, Jim Thompson, came to talk to our hockey association, we were owned by the Orlando Magic. So the Positive Coaching Alliance was doing some stuff with the NBA, and we were told that we had to go to this workshop. And being a hockey guy, the first thing you hear is positive coaching, and you see it's from Berkeley, California, and you think it's going to be sing kumbaya. You know, it's okay if kids are picking daisies in the outfield. And I walked out of that workshop just so invigorated, because it was about making athletes the best they possibly could be, but also be better people, and how sports can help children learn to be better people, learn to deal with adversity, learn to deal with the teamwork, all the things that are going to make them successful in life. Because we all can talk about, oh, we may have had out of our thousands of kids a couple of NHL players or NBA players that came through our programs or whatever, but the majority of them are just going out into society, going to be moms and dads, and, you know, successful people in the workforce or good citizens. And we want to give them that opportunity to use sports to help improve their life.
I love that. I mean, obviously at Akron, I've got my Life U program that I was doing with Matt Cook, and he's taken it and run with it tenfold of what we originally had. And the idea of creating great citizens and great taxpayers, that's the ultimate, right? We don't want leeches on society. We want some great taxpayers that are contributing well, but also just being great for themselves and their spouses and great parents. And it's just amazing what can happen through sport when we see it through the lens of developing our people and our young people, rather than just developing them into the greatest asset that they can personally be, and understanding it's not just about them. It's about so much more.
Yeah. I mean, because we do workshops for parents as well as coaches and for the kids. And it's all different areas, like areas on empathy, on bullying, on being the idea of growth mindset, working with the team, honoring the game, like dealing with officials. How we've always been talking, it's amazing how these kids do kind of get it. Because one of the things I try to bring up with officials is, at the end of the day, their officials are human beings. And the kids start to realize, like, I'm just screaming at another human. That's like, well, that's wrong, you know, as opposed to this inanimate object that's there to mess us up. We joke in our clinics, the ones I do, about our workshops, that the referee is the only one who, if he doesn't show up, everybody hates him. And when he does show up, everybody hates him. So it's not a great job. And if we chase out the really good ones, then we're stuck with the ones who aren't as experienced, and it's going to make our experience not as much fun. And we even talk about, like, we try to set up things where how players can, you know, when something goes wrong for your teammate, you have a signals, like, to give them like a brush it off, that you're there to support them and not bring them down. Or I even bring up a lot in my workshop that what happens if you're an athlete, you know, especially these kids that want to go on to college, the coach's job is to find an athlete that's better than you to take your place. How do you deal with, are you going to help that player be the best player they are can be, because that's the best thing for the team, which ultimately will make you the best player, because you're going to compete harder to go against them. Or are we going to be that kid is like, oh no, he's trying to help, I'm not going to help him because he's there to take my job, you know, as opposed to looking what's best for the unit, not just best for ourselves.
Yeah, and how often someone coming in and pushing you is actually great. You know, at first it kind of stinks, like, oh man, this is so much harder, but it makes you so much better, which is absolutely fantastic. Again, back to the idea of iron sharpens iron when they meet. And just same with the group you had in Orlando, where they end up a few of them being NHL players. I think some of them went to Division One as well, AHL, all that. So it's fantastic to hear. I'm curious about how, like, you talked about it a little bit, but what are some of the things that you do now that you probably didn't do then when you first started with the Coaching Alliance? So I'm assuming that was probably a big shift in mindset and a big eye-opening experience where you're like, wow, this is amazing.
Yeah, you start learning techniques to coach, where one of the things that I think that is a really important aspect for coaches to look into is the idea of finding them doing things right. We have a thing called positive charting, where you start, this, they did this right, they did this right, they did this right, as opposed to all the time finding everything they do wrong. We want to find what they, it makes them feel good about themselves. It makes them want to repeat the things that you want to see them do. I mean, I remember having the kids that just would irritate me. Just like, I just want to, like, they just drive me out of my mind. And then when I started to look at what they did well, and if we were a 10U kid, it might have been that he stayed in line and didn't whack somebody, or that he went when he was supposed to. And then all of a sudden it's like, wow, he's getting better at this. And I would compliment him, hey, you were ready to go, those kinds of things. And instead of having a kid that irritated me, by after a while I was like, wow, I really like this kid. He's a good little kid. But again, it wasn't looking for all the things that were bothering me or things that I thought he needed to fix. It was finding what he did well and build off of that.
I love that. Like, you simply changed your mindset from trying to fix the player to basically, like, take care of and be a cheerleader for them. And that was the big difference. I mean, just that mindset shift in you probably made, one, your life a lot better and really enjoyable, and two, gave that kid a lot more confidence and made them want to come back, plus try a lot harder. So you're getting more out of them, you're keeping them around this beautiful game that we all love, and you're having such a, like, enjoyable, better experience. That's awesome to hear.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things that coaches forget. We need to have fun too. It's okay. We should be having a blast with the kids out there. And that doesn't mean we don't correct them or we don't keep discipline, because the kids want discipline. They want to get better. They want us to give them feedback. But the first thing we have to look at is how we build that relationship with the players, that they know that anything that we're giving them that could be construed as negative feedback is still for their benefit, that we're not doing it to make me feel better as a coach or to feel good, but this is going to help me. This, and I'm doing it because I care about you. And then when you're getting with older kids, they can really get the idea that some of the stuff you're going to tell them is going to be rough. Like, you're coaching junior, it could be you're sitting out tonight, and these are the reasons. And but it's because I care about you that I'm telling you these things. That the biggest and most important thing is I care about you as a person. And then as an athlete, and I'm here to make you better.
Man, I can't think of a better way to end. If you have anything else or where we can find you, that's great. But just, we're here to help. It's coming from a place of love, care, and respect. And we're here to help you get better. And all of our efforts are to do that. And we're going to celebrate the things that are good, because too often we just think about what's terrible and watch the news, and that's all that we see, rather than celebrating all the positive things that are truly happening in the world. Because it takes a long time for things to get better and go positive, but it's pretty hard to miss something that goes bad really, really quickly. But most of the time, things are truly okay, getting better, and people are growing. And we've talked about a bunch of reasons of how you're going about that and how we can go about that as coaches and parents. So thanks again for coming on. Where we can find you, any kind of plugs you want to do, feel free.
Okay. I've recently got involved in Twitter. That's how Greg and I got involved. So you just look me up on at Jim Haverstrom, and most of everything I'm talking about is usually about sports and coaching and how kids learn. And that's my, I think my forte is, and I think that's where we need to go with USA Hockey, is the idea that organizations, the key thing that they have to have is people in place that truly understand what child learning is all about, to give them the best possible ability to get better, come back, and enjoy and love this game.
Wonderful. Thanks so much, Jim.
Take care.
That concludes this week's episode. Thanks for joining us here at Hockey IQ. If you haven't already, take a quick moment to hit that subscribe button, give us a thumbs up, and drop a review. If you want to be a great teammate, even recommend us to a friend. You can follow us at Hockey's Arsenal on Twitter and Instagram. Check out the website, hockeysarsenal.com, where you can subscribe to the weekly newsletter. You won't regret it. Catch you Buttes here next week for a brand new episode.